All right, so this is BioCure 231, the hybrid class. And my watch doesn't have the date, but it's September 2nd, right? And we're just done with the first practicum in here. So now, as far as the lab is concerned, we're moving on to Unit 2. And Unit 2 has bones. So the next practicum is going to have a lot of bones on it, like these models right here. Not so many pictures anymore. We had maybe had a picture of bone on the practicum, but now really no pictures. Pretty much from here on out, not very many pictures. It's going to be the real specimens or models of real specimens. So we're talking about the skeleton, and the skeleton is made up of two main areas. The first main area is what we call the axial skeleton, and it is made out of bones of the head, bones of the vertebral column, and bones that make up the thoracic cage, including the ribs and the sternum. So that's axial skeleton. And in your book, you have a pretty good picture that shows the two main divisions of the skeleton. Okay, right here. So the green is the axial skeleton. The other part of the skeleton is what we call the appendicular skeleton. And the appendicular skeleton refers to your upper appendage and your lower appendage, plus some bones that attach your upper appendage to the axial skeleton. We call that the pectoral girdle. And some bones that attach the lower appendage to the axial skeleton. That's what we call the pelvic girdle. So the appendicular skeleton are bones of the appendages plus the girdles as well. What does it mean to girdle something? It means to surround. It means to girdle something is to surround. So like when you girdle a tree, basically you cut the bark all the way around the tree, and then water evaporates and the tree dies as a result. So that's the way that you people kill trees that they don't want. They girdle it. Girdle meaning surrounding. So the pectoral girdle is like surrounding the pectoral region right here, and the pelvic girdle is what? Surrounding the pelvic region, more or less. Okay. All right, so the bones that we're interested in this week and also next week are the axial skeleton bones. Right, and today we're going to look at some bones that make up the skull, right up over here. That's our primary interest. All right, so here we have a skull. You have some skulls on your table, and I want to reiterate how important it is for you to become familiar with bones, the names of bones and the parts of bones, because if you know, for instance, this bone right here in the top anterior part of your cranium, we call that the That's the frontal bone. You also know the name of the lobe of the brain that's right there, which would be the frontal lobe. And the temporal bone is right here, kind of right by your ears. There you have a lobe of the brain right there. That's the temporal lobe. So when you learn bones, you also learn a lot of neuroanatomy automatically. You learn a lot of vascular anatomy. You learn a lot of muscle anatomy. So by learning bones, which is relatively easy because we all kind of know what bones look like in our bodies, right? You know your arm is long. That makes learning a lot of different parts of your body pretty easy as well. So spend a lot of time with your bones. Okay. So let's look at some of these bones. You know what? Since I really haven't, I didn't lecture on this. Did I talk about the landmarks on bones in lecture last time? No. You know what? I got to do that. I got to do that. We didn't do anything on bones. Okay. We're going to do that. So let's see. We see something that says lectures and something that says bones. I know it's here. What happened to it? Where's six? It disappeared. It got moved. Where did it get moved to? Dang. Maybe somebody put it in here. No. Somebody put it in here. No. All right, well, if you want some lecture notes, what do you do? Yeah, go to Blackboard. Okay. Look for something that says anatomy. It's really not there. All right, so here are some lecture notes. So we're going to talk about some landmarks of bones because I'm going to be using these terms in lecture today. The first designation is a raised rough area. It's a spot on the bone that's raised, so it's a bump, but it's also rough. And you can palpate it with your fingertip. It's going to feel rough. And that's what we call a process. And almost 100% of the time, the function of a process is for muscle attachment. All right, so a muscle is going to attach to a bone. And what does a muscle do? It contracts. So it's going to pull on that bone. So anytime you stress a part of your body, guess what it does? Like, for instance, if you stress this biceps brachii by curling a weight all day long, what's going to happen to that biceps brachii? It's going to get sore, yeah, this is true. But it's also going to eventually respond by getting stronger and bigger, right? So it's going to get bigger and stronger when you exercise it. The same thing with a bone. If a tendon is pulling on a bone at a little location, that part of the bone is going to get bigger and stronger as a result of that tension being applied to it, right? So it turns into a process, a rough, thick area on the bone. And we call that a process. There are a number of processes. Tubercles is a kind of process that we're going to find on various bones. It's a tiny process because only a kind of a weak muscle attaches there. A little bit bigger one is a tubercle, right? But that's a process. And then we have a tuberosity, which is a little bit bigger still, but it's a process. So what's the function of a tuberosity? Function of a tuberosity. A tuberosity is a process. And what's a function of it? Muscle attachment. All right. A trochanter is a very large process. So it's massive. It's very bony. And it has big, strong, massive muscles that attach to it. All right. So what's the function of a trochanter? Muscle attachment. Yeah, just muscle attachment. Okay. Epicondyle, malleolus, crest. These are all processes, right? And so a crest is a process that's kind of long, maybe on the top of a bone. All right, for instance, like the top of our hip bones, there's a crest that big, massive muscles attach to. All right, so what's the function of a crest? It's for muscle attachment. And a spine is, it could be a very narrow process. So it has muscles attached to it. That's the function of a spine, but it's a little bit narrow. And a line is what? Really long. And it might not be a very tall process. It just might be a little slightly raised area along a bone. But that's going to be also for what? Muscle attachment. So these are all the names of processes for muscles to attach. So for instance, we might modify the name of this tuberosity by calling it the deltoid tuberosity. So there's a deltoid tuberosity on a bone in your arm. And what's really nice about that is now you know what muscle attaches to the humerus at that location. Take a wild guess. What muscle would attach to the deltoid tuberosity? It's going to be the deltoid muscle. All right, so a lot of these things should start to add up and make a little bit of sense to you. Okay. All right, the other kind of landmark is a depression or a bowl in a bone. And what do you do with a bowl at home? You put stuff in it. And that's exactly what happens to depressions that you have in your own bones. It's for holding something. And it doesn't go by the name depression. These are the names that are used in anatomy. A fossa is a bowl for holding something. You have a fossa in the floor of your cranium that holds your brain, right? It's a bowl for holding your brain, like the anterior cranial fossa. A sulcus is a depression, but it's going to be long and narrow. So maybe a blood vessel goes through it or a nerve or something on the surface of a bone. That would be a sulcus. And a groove is the same thing. A groove and a sulcus pretty much are the same thing. Sometimes they're used interchangeably. like there is a groove or a sulcus near the head of the humerus that a tendon of a biceps goes through. There's a little depression right there. Right on, right on. Let's get our easels out.
Yeah, I think you're the last
one. I'm the last one?
I think so.
Okay, fantastic. We don't have to set it up. Thanks for stopping in. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, because I want to give you just a little, because we're in lab. Yeah. So next time when we have lecture, eventually, I don't know when that's going to be exactly when, we're going to go back and do something about bones, the microscopic structure of bones. Yeah. But I don't want you guys to get too far behind in lab. Okay. And this is just some really good basic information. All right. So another kind of depression that you have is an alveolus. Who can tell me something about an alveolus? What's an alveolus? You had to know that it made a certain kind of gland in your body. It's kind of like a balloon. It's more spherical, right? You have some glands that have made out of tubes. Some of the tubes are straight, so we just call that a straight tubular gland. Or if it's more like a bulge or a balloon, we call that an alveolar gland, right? So an alveolus is a socket for something, and we have a number of sockets in our lower jawbone and our upper jawbone. Guess what we have placed in those sockets? We got teeth placed in them, right? Because you got teeth in the upper jawbone, teeth in the lower jawbone, and we call those alveoli. Okay. The next thing is a hole in the bone. We don't just simply call it a hole. We call it a foramen. A hole in a bone is a foramen. But it can go by different names too. If it's a long hole that's more like a canal because it's really, really long, we can call it a canal. And then every once in a while, we can call it a meatus. And there is one in our head right here that's associated with our ears that allows sound energy to enter our head so that it can stimulate our hearing apparatus inside our head. So that's the external auditory meatus. So a meatus is like a hole in a bone. All right, so what's the function of all these holes right here? Yeah, so if we have a hole, do we have any holes in this room? And what do we use them for? Like there's a doorway right there, right? It's a passageway so that we can get in and out. So holes in bones are passageways so that maybe blood vessels can go through a bone or nerves. Right. Another kind of hole is going to be, instead of a nice round hole or round foramen, maybe it's very elongated, and we call that a fissure. And then in some bones, there is a big space, and we call that a sinus. So, for instance, on our mannequin back over here, all right, everybody told me what this bone was right here. What's the bone in the superior anterior part of the cranium right here, and it comes down to here? That's the frontal bone, and there's a big cavity or sinus in this bone, and that's what we call a paranasal sinuses. So we have four pairs of paranasal sinuses. One is in the frontal bone that you can see right here, and then there's some others in other bones that we're going to look at a little bit later today. All right, so those are holes in bones. What's another kind of thing? Okay, so a rough raised area, that's a process, that's for muscle attachment. Now, what if you have a raised area on a bone and it's not rough, it's smooth? It's really, really smooth. That means that a muscle doesn't attach there. That is a place where two bones come together, right, and that forms a joint. And bones move with respect to each other at that joint. So what should that joint be like? Should the bones be really rough and jagged so when they move they grind each other down, or should they be nice and smooth and slippery so they glide over each other? Smooth so they glide. What do you call it when the joints become rough and jagged instead of smooth? That's a pathological condition. And they grind each other down. That's called arthritis. That's called arthritis. Right, and that's a really terrible, debilitating disease. Could be fatal, depending on the kind of arthritis that you have, as a matter of fact. Okay, So a rough, smooth area on a bone is for an articulation, right? And here are some names of articulations. A condyle is for articulation. The end of a bone, sometimes we call it the head of a bone. If it's smooth, right, that's for an articulation. A facet is actually a depression, but if it's smooth, it's for articulation. And then we have a couple names of articulating surfaces. There's trochlea is one of them, and then also one called capitulum that you'll have to know. And what is capitulum? What does that look like? Capitulum. All right, that's a smooth articulating surface on a bone. And then one last feature. Some bones are straight, and then they make a curve. And a good example, can anybody think of an example of a bone that's kind of straight and then makes a curve?
Jawbone.
Yes. There's a bone that's kind of straight, like your jawbone, and then it makes a curve. It goes superior. So your jawbone courses anterior posterior, and then it makes a 90-degree turn and goes superior. So that vertical part of the jawbone is called the ramus. Okay, is the ramus of the mandible. So I'll show you some pictures of these things. All right, so those are some of the features that we want to be looking at in today's lab. So where are these things located? Okay, let's look at these bones right here. Bones of the head could be divided into two main areas. Bones that make up the cranial vault, we call those cranial bones, so that they surround the brain, and other bones that make up the face. All right, so the mandible. What kind of bone do you think the mandible is? Cranial bone or facial bone? That's a facial bone. What about these little nasal bones on the bridge of your nose right here? They're facial bones as well. Okay. And how about the bones that make your cheeks right here? Can you see the name of these right here? Okay. The zygomatic bones, and as a matter of fact, they're actually really kind of small, and so they're just facial bones. They don't actually participate in making any of the cranium. All right, and then your upper jawbone, right here, is also a facial bone. So the bones that make up the cranium, let's take a look at those. You've got, of course, the frontal bone, and behind the frontal bone, you have the parietal bone. Those are some that make up the cranium. And then here's a really interesting one. It goes all the way across the head from one side to the other. And it's like fuchsia colored to me or something. I don't know, what color is this thing right here? Should be the same as this right here. What color does that look? It doesn't have a color? The fuchsia? Okay, great. All right, so this is the sphenoid bone. All right, it goes all the way across. That's a cranial bone. And on the sides of our head, we have temporal bone. That's a cranial bone. So let's change the aspect of what I'm looking at. Let's look at this lateral view. All right, so we got bones of the cranium, the frontal bone, parietal, occipital, and temporal. Those are some major ones. And then here is that sphenoid bone right here. And a couple others, the ethmoid is a bone that makes up part of the cranium as well. Right, so those are the bones of the cranium. All the rest that we have right here are what we call facial bones. All right, this region of the temporal bone is really flat. So the sides of your head are flat. So guess what we call that part of the temporal bone? If it's the flat part, yeah, what's the name for flat? Squamous. Okay, squamous is flat. Yeah, squamous is flat. So that's the squamous region of the temporal bone. Here we have the temporal bone, but there's a big, rough, raised area. And you can feel that with your fingertips behind your earlobe. Right? That's the mastoid process. Can you find the mastoid process on your skulls? How do you know where your ear is on this skull? Because you can find the external auditory meatus right here. And so right posterior and inferior to it is the mastoid process. Now, is that kind of a dainty process, or is it large and bony and rough? Is it massive? Or is it petite? It's massive. All right, that mastoid process is massive, and that's where that name comes from. All right, so guess what kind of muscles attach to this mastoid process? Small muscles or strong muscles? Really strong muscles that maintain your head position so that you don't break your neck, so that you can rotate your head, you can flex and extend your neck. Very big, strong muscles, and maybe you can even see them working in some people, okay? And then here, styloid process on the on the temporal bone. So you can imagine what kind of muscles attach to this one. Not nearly as strong as the ones that attach to the mastoid process, right? These muscles are used more for articulation, right? For speaking, for eating, for breathing and swallowing, but nothing that requires a lot of power or strength. All right. Okay, let me tell you some. Oh, let's talk about that mandible since we're here. Here's a hole. What do we call a hole? Foramen. And this is the mental region of the mandible. So we call this the mental foramen of the mandible. This is the body. This is the major part of the mandible. And then it makes an angle, so we call this the angle. And this 90-degree bend that's sticking up vertically, that's what we call the ramus. Right, so the ramus is that 90-degree bend in a bone. Okay. And we see a couple protuberances coming off the top of the mandible. This one right here is going to be very nice and round and smooth. So what do we call a smooth surface on a bone? What is one possible name? Condyle. Right, and so that's for an articulation. And so, as a matter of fact, there's only one bone in your head that can move. And guess which one that is? That is the mandible right here. And here's the joint at which it moves. So that joint is made up of the temporal bone and the mandible. So guess what we call that joint? That's the temporomandibular joint. Hardly anybody ever calls it by that because it's such a long name. What do we usually call? We usually just say TMJ. Which stands for what? Temporomandibular joint. A lot of pathology associated with that joint, right? If you bang your head just right, play football, right? Motorcycle, car accident, even chewing wrong can damage that joint. So it's relatively complicated because of the kinds of motions that it can undergo. So if you need to talk to a specialist on that particular joint, who would be a good physician to talk to about that? A dentist, exactly right. Right, so they would specialize in that joint because it helps make up the oral cavity. All right, so that's the mandibular, mandibular condyle. All right, and then over here, there's a process sticking up, and you can see that's called the coronoid process of the mandible. And guess what the function of this coronoid process is? Process is for, you're always going to want to say without thinking, muscle attachment. So there are muscles there for elevating the jaw, for chewing, for grinding back and forth, okay? And also for protruding your mandible out. Now be careful, don't chip a tooth when you do that. So when you protrude, what do you do with your mandible? You poke it out, you go, okay? All right, and then retract is to pull it back in like that. So there are muscles that attach to these points so that you can do all of those kinds of motions at this TMJ. So it's a really kind of a special joint. All right, so we got mental foramen. Ah, look, another foramen right here. What bone is that in? That's the maxilla. And this socket right here that your eyeball sticks in, that's called an orbit. Okay, so this right here is the infra, meaning below, orbital foramen, infraorbital foramen that's in the maxilla. And since there's an infraorbital foramen, you could probably guess what? There is a supraorbital foramen. And what bone is that in? That's in the frontal bone. Sometimes this one is not complete, this hole right here isn't completely surrounded by bone. It actually forms this kind of structure. What do we call this? This is a notch. So So sometimes this is a complete foramen, sometimes it's just a supraorbital notch. So it can go by different names. All right, so here is your cheekbone, the zygomatic. And you can see the zygomatic bone articulates with the temporal bone. So here's the joint. The immovable joints in the skull are called sutures. Okay? And look at this process on the skulls that you have on your desk. It's very prominent, right? And as a matter of fact, if you hold your skull on edge, look at that big space that it forms right in there. So it forms an arch, right? Those processes form an arch. And this is sometimes how we name processes. So this is important nomenclature. So what's the name of the bone right here? It's a temporal bone. And here's a process. What's the name of the bone right here? Zygomatic bone. Okay. So the way that we name this process is not by the name of the bone that it's on, but the name of the bone that it is articulating with. So what bone is this process articulating with? It's the zygomatic bone. So this right here is the zygomatic process of the temporal bone. Okay. So let me do it again a couple different times. Here's the process, and the process is on the zygomatic bone, but we don't call it the zygomatic process. We name it by the bone that it articulates with, which is what? So this is the temporal process of the zygomatic bone. All right, so you don't have all these things labeled on your diagram, but you might have to be familiar with some of these. So you don't have to memorize every certain little last detail if you just know some general rules on how things are named. All right, so let's do it again. What bone is this? Maxilla. And notice there's a process on the maxilla that goes all the way up and articulates with the frontal bone. So guess what we named this process right here? Okay, it's on the maxilla, but we don't name it from the maxilla. We name it from the bone it articulates with. So this is the frontal process of the maxilla. All right, and guess what this is? What bone is that? Zygomatic bone, and it articulates with the frontal bone. So guess what the name of this process is? That's the frontal process of the zygomatic bone. This is the temporal process of the zygomatic bone. All right, and I know that's really terribly confusing sometimes until you see it, and then it just makes perfect sense. So if it's not making sense, you got to talk to me, and I'll just go over it with you a bunch of times. Okay? Okay. We have some sutures, some joints between the bones of the skull. And this one right here is called the squamosal suture because it's in the squamous region of the skull. Here is the lambdoidal suture or lambdoid suture. And here is the occipital mastoid because here's the occipital bone. Here is the temporal bone. Well, this is the mastoid region of the temporal bone. Occipital mastoid suture. And guess what that suture is called? Okay, it could be called frontal or it could be called coronal suture. And there's also one right between the parietal bones. Yeah, and so that's called the sagittal suture. It's called the sagittal suture. All right, so you do have to know some names of sutures as well. Okay. There's a little, so you have the nasal bones right here. There's a little tiny bone right here that helps make up the orbital cavity. Also helps make up the wall of the nasal cavity right up in here. That's called the lacrimal bone. And does anybody know what a lacrimal gland does for us? What is a lacrimal gland? Yeah, it makes tears, right? And so those tears lubricate our eyeballs, washes out bacteria, dust particles. And so that's happening all the time. But when we're really sad, we cry, and that lacrimal gland releases a lot of tears, which kind of runs over this zygomatic area right here, your cheekbone sometimes. But have you ever noticed where else do those tears go sometimes? Down, yeah, your throat, right? Because they get into your nasal cavity and they can give you a runny nose because there is a foramen in this lacrimal bone that allows tears to go from the orbit into the nasal cavity. And that lacrimal bone is really, really, really thin. We have some real skulls here. And the lacrimal bone is completely gone if it's a real skull. These plastic skulls, we can still see it. Because that bone is so thin, as soon as we touch it with our fingertips, there's enough acid on our fingertips just to completely dissolve it away. That's how thin it is. So it's really the thinnest, most delicate bone in the head. That's the lacrimal bone. And then, posterior to the lacrimal bone is the ethmoid. And I'll tell you, the ethmoid bone is probably my favorite bone of the skull because of all the neat things that it does. It helps make up the, what kind of cavity is this? Orbital cavity. Yeah, so it helps make up the orbital cavity. So it allows you to have good vision. That's one function of the ethmoid bone. Another function of the ethmoid bone, if we go back over here, all right, here we see a structure inside the nasal cavity, which is separating the nasal cavity into right and left parts. So a structure that separates a cavity or divides a cavity up into different areas is what we call a septum. And the ethmoid bone helps make up the nasal septum. And that's real important because it orders air that we breathe in and out of our body so that it's not turbulent, so it doesn't get... So it stays nice and laminar, which means that it's easy to breathe in and out of our bodies. All right, so if there's a deviation of the nasal septum, people have a hard time breathing, especially when they're asleep, right? That can be a real problem. All right, so the ethmoid bone helps make up this perpendicular plate or the septum of our nasal cavity so that we can breathe nice and easy. All right, so the ethmoid bone is in this region right up over here. Okay. What else do I see in that slide? Not too much. Okay, let's maybe look at some disarticulated bones to get an idea of how bones fit together in our skull. So here is mastoid process, styloid process, external auditory meatus, and then the zygomatic arch, because the zygomatic bone is over here. What's the name of this bone right here? That's a temporal bone, right? So your ear is going to be right here. And what else did I forget to mention? Ah, there's a depression, okay, right here, called the mandibular fossa. And if you palpate that fossa, okay, if you palpate that fossa, you're going to see it's nice and smooth. So what's being held in this fossa right here? The mandible, the condylar process on the mandible. So this makes up part of the what? That TMJ right here. Okay, and then of course you see the squamous region. Okay, so that's a nice temporal bone. Can you find that on your skeleton? Pretty easy. All right, here is that bone that goes all the way across your head from one side to the other. And it kind of looks like a bat or a butterfly. This is a pretty interesting bone. We call it the sphenoid bone. I don't know what sphenoid means, but I could guess. What does it probably mean? Probably means bat or butterfly, something like that. Does anybody speak Latin or Greek? I don't know where the origin of this is. Does sphenoid ring a bell for anybody? No? Okay. It's probably in the book somewhere. Okay. Well, here is a depression in the sphenoid bone. And what is the depression for? It holds something. Guess what it's holding? There's probably no way you guys would know this, but I ask you because I know the answer. The pituitary gland is right in there. Have you heard of pituitary gland? That's really an important master endocrine gland that controls a number of other endocrine glands and important functions in your body. And so it sits right at the base of the brain, right inside your skull in the sphenoid bone. And you can find it by getting your skull, all right, and taking the skull cap off. All right, so I'm just carefully taking the skull cap off. The skull cap is made partly out of the, what is this bone right here? That's a frontal bone. And then we have the two parietal bones and even a little bit of the occipital. So it's just a contrived bone because of the way it's been cut off. But it's got a name because it's removed frequently from people to take a look at their brain on the inside. It's called a calvarium. So this thing's the skull cap or the calvarium. And now if we look inside the skull, I can see this depression, right? And that's the depression in the sphenoid bone called the sella turcica. That's where the pituitary gland sits. So you can see it right in there. The sella turcica. All right, so you see the sphenoid bone has got wings. The big wing right here is called the greater wing. The smaller one is called the lesser wing, right? So greater and lesser wing. And another view, let's go to another view of the sphenoid. Okay, posterior view. Okay, it has these vertical bony plates. So if we look down near the oral cavity, right down over here, okay, I see them. Here's one, and here's one. These are what we call the pterygoid plates. And the muscles, guess what the name of the muscles are that attach here to the pterygoid plates? The pterygoid muscles, okay? And these muscles are also important for chewing. Yeah, for elevating your mandible, but also for grinding your mandible back and forth so that you can grind food. So the sphenoid is a pretty important bone that way. Let's see if I have another view of the sphenoid. No, I don't. But here you can see the sphenoid bone. Okay. All right, so this one right here, ethmoid. All right, that's my favorite bone. And this ethmoid is right smack in the middle, right above your nasal cavity. All right, it does make up part of the cranial vault or the cranium. And there is something that's sticking up into the skull right here. That's called a crista galli. So if you take your calvarium off your skull and look right above the nasal cavity, right, you can see the ethmoid bone right here. And that thing that looks like a shark's fin sticking up, that's what's called the crista galli right there. All right, and guess why they call it the ethmoid bone? Because if we rotate this just a little bit, it kind of looks like the letter E. All right, just forget about that crista galli right here. So here is the middle part of the E. This is what makes the nasal septum, okay? And these other parts of the bone, look at all the different cavities inside the ethmoid bone. What do we call those cavities in cranial bones and even facial bones? It's called a sinus, paranasal sinus. And the special job of a paranasal sinus is that it's loaded with lymphatic tissue. So what does lymphatic tissue do for us? It fights infection. Right, so these paranasal sinuses fight infection because every time we breathe in, we're breathing in bacteria, viruses, H1N1, all that kind of stuff. Right, so these sinuses protect us from getting those infections. But they can be chronically infected, right? And it's really difficult to treat because I don't see any blood vessels going around in there. And if you treat them with antibiotics, it's got to be for a really long time because it takes a long time to get over that. And then some people don't even get over it with that, and the infection has to be removed surgically by cleaning out those pockets. That's pretty tough to go through. Okay, so that's part of the ethmoid bone. So that's another function of the ethmoid bone, is that it keeps us nice and healthy. Okay, I want to show you another picture of where the ethmoid bone is. Right here. All right, so if you look down into the cranium by taking the calvarium off, here's another view of the ethmoid bone. Here's the crista galli sticking up. And then there are some horizontal plates, which we call the cribriform plate. And look what that cribriform plate has in it. What does it have in it? A bunch of little holes. What do we call little holes? Foramina, okay? And these foramina are associated with a part of the brain that's important for olfaction. What's the sense of olfaction? It's the sense of smell. All right, so those nerves, guess where those nerves go? Through the cribriform plate of the ethmoid bone into your nasal cavity. So those holes allow you to smell. So the ethmoid bone is really, really nice because it allows you to breathe properly. It helps hold your eyeballs in position because it contributes to the orbit. It has these olfactory foramina so that you can smell, and it's got the crista galli right here. And the crista galli is a special structure that's sticking up in your brain, right? And there are membranes that surround your brain that attach to the crista galli, right? So the crista galli is really holding onto your brain so that your brain isn't sloshing around inside your head. So the crista galli of the ethmoid bone is real important from that aspect. All right, our next bone that we're going to look at is this mandible, right? So what did we call this foramen on the anterior side? That's the mental foramen. Right, here's the body, the angle, the ramus, mandibular condyle, a coronoid process. But look, here's another foramen right here. Find that one on your mandible that you have. Is that easy to find? What's it called? That's called the mandibular foramen. What's the function of that mandibular foramen? It's for a passageway. Okay, it's a passageway. All right, so if you ever are asked what's the function of a foramen, just say passageway. Okay, passageway is good. All right, so in particular, there are nerves that come down through this mandibular foramen that innervate your cheeks and your tongue and gives you the sensation of taste. So whenever you have dental work done, okay, you got to really make sure that that nerve is what? Anesthetized, right? So that you can feel all that digging around in there, right? So that's where that nerve comes from, and that's where you get those shots in that area right there. And after you get that shot of anesthesia, what do they tell you? Like, go out and have lunch or what? No, you shouldn't have anything to eat. Why is that? Yeah, because when you're chewing, you could be grinding away your cheek and your tongue and not even know it, right? So that's why it's important not to chew anything until you get sensation back in your mouth once again. Okay. Well, what bone does this look like? That's your maxilla, upper jawbone, right? So here's the frontal process. Here's the zygomatic process. The maxilla also makes up the part of the orbit. So this is the orbital plate or orbital surface of the maxilla. Your infraorbital foramen. And you have alveoli in the maxilla just like you do the mandible. All right, so that's pretty easy to see. Okay. This is a pretty good picture to look at. So it's kind of a mid-sagittal illustration. And so we're looking right on the nasal septum right here. We're also looking at the roof of the mouth. We're looking right in the middle of the sphenoid bone. And look what's, here's the sella turcica of the sphenoid. And guess what the sphenoid has? This big cavity. What's that called? That's a sinus. It's a paranasal sinus. Okay, so I think we've looked at three of the paranasal sinuses already. One is in the sphenoid. This is the roof of the mouth. These are the bony parts of the roof of the mouth. Sometimes we call that the hard palate, and it's made up of two bones. The anterior part is part of the maxilla, and the posterior part is made up of another bone that we haven't talked about yet. That's the palatine bone. And sometimes people are born with a malformation of these two bones. And anybody know what that's called? That's that cleft palate. And that's really unfortunate because when people eat, where does food go? It doesn't just stay in their oral cavity. It can move up into the nasal cavity. And when they talk, air just doesn't come out of their mouth, right? It comes out of their nose. So it's kind of a mess. So that's something that we'd like to repair surgically right away, okay, that cleft palate. So the cleft palate is due to malformation of the palatine bone or the maxilla or both of those. Here is a foramen. You know what kind of teeth these are right here? What are these teeth called? These are incisors, right? So this is called the incisive foramen because it's associated with these incisors right here. All right, so that's a passageway for something. All right, well now getting back to the nasal septum. The upper bone, the superior bone, is the ethmoid. Right, and that has a perpendicular plate. And then there's a lower bone that makes the nasal septum. It's called the vomer. So ethmoid and vomer help make up the nasal septum. Ah, here are those, the pterygoid plates, or the pterygoid processes of the sphenoid bone that you can see. Okay. Here's a pretty good representation of all of the nasal sinuses, the paranasal sinuses, in the frontal bone. Okay, and then way posterior in the ethmoid bone and the sphenoid bone, and then here's the fourth one in the maxilla. So some of you maybe can look inside the maxilla and actually see, I don't have it on any of these models right here, but that's the fourth bone that has a paranasal sinus in it. Okay, so here just from a lateral view, sphenoid sinus, frontal sinus, ethmoid sinuses, and the maxillary sinus is really big. So what do all these sinuses do for us? Yeah, protect us from infection, right? Help fight infection. Okay. Oh, one last bone. This bone is pretty easy to forget about because it's not generally seen on people. All right, here is your mandible, and this is called a hyoid bone, and it almost looks like a mandible. And indeed, it's inset within the mandible, kind of a horseshoe-shaped bone, right, within your lower jaw. But it's kind of dainty and it's kind of thin, so don't go poking around to try and find it. There's some very strong muscles around it. And if you do press hard enough to actually feel it, guess what? You could actually break it because it's not very strong at all. So you just got to believe me that it's up in there in the jawbone. And there are muscles attached to it for articulation, for swallowing, right, and for breathing. So it's important for that reason. All right, so those are the bones that we want to cover today. So we go until what, just a little bit before 6? So we got not quite an hour in class yet. So I want to show you some actual bones. So when you come to lab, it's really important to learn anatomy from these models that we have right here, and not just pictures in the book, because the pictures are so flat that you won't get a good impression of what the real bones look like. And on the practicum, from now on, we're not going to have pictures. We're going to have the actual models. So if you just look at a picture, that might not help you for a practicum. Now, if you understand the structure from a real model, then if you go to a picture for review, that's perfect. But if you try to learn from a picture, it's just not going to cut it for most people because we just don't think very well in three dimensions when we look at a picture. Oh, so what bone is this one right here? That's the maxilla. And look, there's a little trap door on it. So I'm going to open it up. And guess what I'm going to find in there? The maxillary sinus. Do you see that big hole right there? That's the maxillary sinus. All right, so that's a maxillary paranasal sinus. So this is a really cool model to look at. And here is even the temporal bone. So if you pull your lab manual out, okay, maybe I could go over a bone or two with you. Or you can break down into groups and just kind of quiz each other on the various parts of bones. All right, so right at the beginning of Unit 2, axial skeleton, frontal bone. Guess what we got? So guess what bone that is? That's the frontal bone. Here you can see the orbital plates right here. Okay, and this raised area, what's that called? Maybe look in your textbook. That's called the glabella. That's the glabella. All right, so that's a pretty easy bone to see. Look what we got here. Ah, I never did this before. This is great. Okay, what kind of bone does that look like? Lower jawbone, that's the mandible. Here's a hole. What hole's that? Mental foramen. All right, and so this is the body of the mandible. This is the angle right here. So angle of the mandible. This vertical, I'm sorry? Oh yeah, and then the vertical part is the ramus. And then here is the mandibular notch that's separating the mandibular condyle from the coronoid process. All right, so this is an articulating surface. This is for muscle attachment. And then right here, what's this hole called? Autofocus? It's a little confusing because it's very deep. This is the mandibular foramen. All right, so how would you describe where that mandibular foramen is, which is right here? What's a good way of looking at this? All right, I'll point to it since it doesn't focus real well. It's right in here. How would you describe where that is? First, you'd say, what bone? What bone is that? That's the mandible. Now, where in the mandible? Is it on the body? No, it's on the ramus, right? So, and then what part of the ramus? Okay, you could say interior, but maybe what's a better way? Yeah. See, this is lateral surface. Here's the medial surface. So I would say the medial aspect of the mandibular ramus is where we find the mandibular foramen. Okay? So that's how we would use that. And then here are all of the alveoli, all the sockets that the roots of the teeth are inserted into, and the edge of the alveoli are what we call the alveolar margins. The margin is just an edge. Okay? See the edge of the alveoli? These are the alveolar margins right here. What's the margin on a piece of paper? Is it the center? It's the edge, right? So here's the edge of an alveolus. We call that the alveolar margin. All right, so here's mandible. Here's another pretty easy bone to see. What's that? Even out of focus. That is the sphenoid bone, right? Sphenoid bone. And maybe this is even a better way to look at it. Sphenoid. Here's the cella turcica that holds the pituitary gland. Here's the greater wings. And then these little wings right here are called the lesser wings. Okay? And then these vertical bony processes are called the pterygoid processes. Pterygoid processes. All right, so let's review. What's that? Frontal bone. What's that? Sphenoid. All right. So let's go take a look at... here's a good one. This is a good one to talk of next. What's that? Yeah, that's the maxilla. That's the upper jawbone, right? Here's the frontal process. Here's the zygomatic process. If we look inside, right, this is the part that makes up the hard palate of the mouth. So we would call this the horizontal plate. The incisive foramen is right here. And, let's look right in here. Look at that. Look at that big cavity. What do we call that big cavity? That's a sinus. That's the maxillary sinus, maxillary paranasal sinus. All right, so maxilla. Should I quiz you? What's that? Sphenoid. Okay. Here's a bone that maybe you would be able to recognize even without taking this class. It is right here. Okay. Look at this huge hole. That's the foramen magnum. That's how the spinal cord exits the cranium. Goes through this hole right here. And that hole is in the occipital bone. So that's way back where at the base of your head like this. All right, so occipital bone. What's that? Mandible. Maxilla. Frontal bone. Okay. Another really nice bone is this one right here. Okay. External acoustic meatus. Here we have a process that is articulating with the zygomatic bone. So that's the zygomatic process of the temporal bone. Here's a big, massive process. Mastoid process. And then this little one right here is kind of broken off. That's the styloid process. And then this flat part of the temporal bone. That's the squamous region of the temporal bone. Okay? All right. So that's temporal bone. Shall we try one for fun? What's that? Maxilla. Okay. Here is a very nondescript bone. Doesn't have any holes in it. So I'll put it down right here. Relatively big. That's the deep surface. Here's the superficial surface. This is the parietal bone. This is the bone that's just posterior to the frontal bone. All right, so say parietal bone for this one. Yeah, parietal bone. And then, okay, our cheeks, very prominent surface feature. But the bone, look at how big that bone is. Really dinky, kind of triangular shaped. Here maybe you can see at the orbital plate of the zygomatic bone. So this triangular shaped one, just call the zygomatic bone. Zygomatic articulates with this one. Maxilla also articulates with this one. Temporal bone. Okay. All right, and what's this one? That's the same one, except it's a different model. It's a zygomatic bone. That's your cheekbone. Okay, zygomatic. We have one that looks like an L. Is that an L, or is this an L? Like this. Okay. This is the palatine bone. A lot of L's in palatine. All right, so it's kind of L-shaped. The palatine bone helps make up the hard palate, right? So here is a maxilla, and look where this palatine bone goes. Kind of goes right here. So if you look at the inferior surface of the hard palate on your skeletons, you should be able to see the maxilla, a suture, and then the palatine bone right here, the horizontal plate of the palatine. Or you could actually call it the maxillary process of the palatine because it articulates with the maxilla. And this could be called the palatine process of the maxilla because it articulates with the palatine bone. Right? Do you see those two bones in the hard palate right there? So one is the palatine and the other is the maxilla. Okay, so palatine bone. What's this one? Zygomatic. Okay. And this one is my favorite bone. That's the ethmoid. So we're looking at the superior surface of it, and I'm going to rotate it just a little bit so that you can see this thing sticking up into the cranium. That's the crista galli, right? And then on either side of the crista galli, you have the cribriform plates with all those holes in it for olfactory nerves to get down into the nasal cavity. And then if we even look deeper inside the ethmoid bone, guess what we have? These big spaces. These are the paranasal sinuses of the ethmoid bone. Okay, and if we look at the anterior part of the ethmoid bone, here's the perpendicular plate that helps make up the nasal septum. This is the superior part of the nasal septum. Okay, so here are some bones. Let's look over some of these bones again. Temporal bone. Maxilla. Okay. Mandible. Sphenoid bone. Zygomatic bone. Frontal bone. Oh, what's this right here? Yes. some people might have said, and you wouldn't be too wrong, supraorbital foramen, but notice, it's not completely continuous. It is really a notch. So in this particular case, it would be the supraorbital notch, not a foramen. All right. And then, again, this is the zygomatic. Palatine bone. Okay, palatine bone helps make the roof of the mouth, but also a lateral side of a nasal cavity. All right, so that's a facial bone. Ethmoid. Parietal bone. Occipital bone. All right, well, you guys are making some good progress here, actually. So you might not, you might feel a little fatigued after the practicum, okay? But so that, these are the bones that are in your lab manual for this week, all right? So I do want you to know those. And guess what I have for you to study? All right, it's on my website. Is it here? Where's my website? All right, so there's my website. Look what I have for you. Skull bones. So I have a flash quiz for you to take. I don't think I want to do a flash quiz tonight. Well, we got plenty of time to take a flash quiz. I suppose we can. But I think I prefer that you actually spend some time with your lab partners and look over some of these different processes. All right, so this is nice random access. So, well, there should be bones in there, right? Maybe I went too far. Maybe it has to load up. I'm not sure. All right, so I'm going to turn my recorder off now, because I'm probably not going to talk much more.